This is not for you if you get grossed out by this type of thing. Just watch with caution. So that's just my little note to you guys. So our story today takes place in Setagaya Ward, which is in Western Tokyo, Japan. It is December 31st, 2000. A woman named Haruko makes a call to her family. Now she's an older lady, and she lives right next door to her daughter, Yasuko. Sorry if I pronounce any of these names wrong, but she lives right next door to her daughter, Yasuko, her daughter's husband, Mikio, and their two kids, Nina, who's 8, and Rei, who's 6. Now, she's very, very close to her family. They live right next to each other, so they are, like, tight-knit in contact. So it's not weird or anything that she's calling them. But what is weird is that they don't answer the phone when she calls. Now, at first, she doesn't really think anything of this. But as she kind of starts to, like, process things and really think about it, it's New Year's Eve. It's a Sunday. They should be home. There's not anywhere they should have gone or had to do. And it is the morning, but it's not super early. Like, it's around the time that the kids would usually eat breakfast. So they should be awake at this time. Haruko continues to call, and there's still no answer. At around 10 or 10:30 a.m., she's concerned, so she goes over to their house because, again, they live right next door to each other, and she knocks on the front door. There is no answer, and she doesn't really hear any, like, movement inside of the house. So she uses her spare key to enter through the front door. And as soon as she walks in, she sees her son-in-law, Mikio, covered in blood, laying at the bottom of the stairs. And she can see that he's been stabbed multiple times. So she's terrified at this point because her son-in-law is literally dead. She goes upstairs to try and find the rest of her family. And in the hallway between the bathroom and toilet room. Now, I'm not really sure, but I'm assuming that, like, in Tokyo, the bathroom is separate from the toilet or something. But between the bathroom and the toilet rooms, she sees her daughter, Yasuko, and her granddaughter, Nina, laying there. Now they're, like, kind of hugging each other, like, tangled up, almost as if they were, like, trying to protect each other before they died. But they are also covered in lots of blood. There's blood everywhere. Now instinctively she tries to kind of, like, revive them, I guess. Like, she checks to see if they're dead, but they are cold to the touch, and they have lost way too much blood to be alive. So she continues to search the house to find her grandson, and she finds him lying in his bed. At first glance, he looks like he's just sleeping, but she feels him, and he is cold to the touch as well. Now he's not at all bloody, so he was killed in a different way than the rest of his family, which is really weird that a killer would change their method. So keep that in mind as well. Now, obviously, Haruko is absolutely horrified. She just found her whole family dead. So she immediately calls the police, and officers rush to the scene. However, it is New Year's Eve. It's a holiday. crucial to the investigation. So, again, just note that for later on. But it does take officers a little bit longer to arrive on scene. Once the police officers get there, they immediately notice that the scene is very odd. The house is a complete mess. There are papers everywhere. There's just clutter. There are like drawers pulled out, and there's just, it's a mess. They even find that one of the desk drawers was pulled out and the contents were emptied into the bathtub on the second floor. So that's really weird to start out. Also find like a bloody towel and like a cleaning pad or whatever that's bloody, and it almost looks as if the killer was trying to clean up blood. However, the police believe that it is not the family's blood. They think that this blood belongs to the killer because the killer didn't try to clean up any of the other blood, obviously, because there's blood all over the house. So they believe that the blood was from an injury that the killer got, which is not uncommon because oftentimes the murderers will get injured, especially if they're using a knife and the victim is fighting back. It's easy to get cut. So maybe he cut himself or something. That's what police are thinking at this point. They also find that the killer left the murder weapons. There are two bloody knives at the scene of the crime. Now, one of these knives matches the knives that the Miyazawa family has in their kitchen. The other knife does not. So the killer brought one knife and used one knife from the kitchen. We'll get into that a little bit later. But they also find a lot of clothes everywhere in the house. And police look at it, and the sizing does not match anyone in the house. So they believe that the clothes belong to the criminal. They also find several, like 4 or 5 ice cream wrappers in the house, gloves, and just a lot of other things. Like they find a bag, and they believe all of these items belong to the killer, which, again, is very, very weird. It also looks like the killer took some money, because the family's wallets are empty and their bank cards are like lying there. It kind of looks like he was sorting through stuff. So at first glance, the police didn't think there was any forced entry, but as they continue to look through the crime scene, they notice that the screen from the bathroom window is gone. There's no screen. And the flower pot that was laying on the windowsill is like broken on the floor. Now, I don't know how they didn't notice this originally. Maybe they did. I don't really know. But it says at first glance they didn't notice this. So I'm not sure. But they also find that there is unflushed poop in the toilet, which they believe is to be from the killer. So all of this stuff shows that the killer had to have been in the house for a while. Like, I'm talking hours to have done all of this stuff. So, using all of this this information, the police kind of start to develop like a timeline. So I'm not sure how they gathered all of this information, but they know that the family went out shopping at a local mall on December 30th, so the previous day. And then they came back and spent the evening watching TV and just spending time together. Again, I'm not sure how they know all of this, but since the mall, they weren't in contact with anyone. They didn't go anywhere. No one came over. Nothing like that. Now, several neighbors reported hearing a loud noise coming from the house at around 11:30 p.m. on December 30th. So that is the time of death that police have. So, something that is very, very weird. There are so many things that are weird with this case, but something I find super odd is that the killer used the computer, because the police checked the Miyazawa's computer records, and they find that the murderer was on 118. So someone used the computer at 1:18 a.m. on December 31st, and this was after the family was dead. They also find that someone used it at 10 a.m. Now, if you remember, this is about the time that Haruko came over, so it could have just been her, like, bumping into something. But it might also have been the killer. But definitely the 1:18 a.m. time was the killer. Which shows that he, if he killed them at 11:30, that means he was in the house 2 hours later. So, again, that is super suspicious. But then on January 3rd of 2001, so a couple days later, autopsy report comes back from the bodies. So Ray, who was the youngest child, he's 6 years old, his cause of death is determined as suffocation. He was strangled by hand, and it is determined that he was killed first because there was no blood on him or in his room. And if he was killed last, the killer would have had to have, like, tracked blood in. Everyone else in the family died of blood loss from their wounds. So here's what police think happened. They think that the killer entered through the bathroom window. They think that he strangled Ray first while he was sleeping in his bedroom, because he didn't want the other family members to know that he was there. So he thought of the most silent way to kill Ray, I guess, and that was strangulation. But Mikio, Ray's father, kind of heard like a commotion upstairs or something, and he started to go up the stairs when the killer met him and stabbed him with his knife. But the autopsy report, it showed a piece of a knife broken off inside of Mikio's head. So police think that the killer broke his knife, and then that's why he took a kitchen knife. Then he went upstairs to kill Nina and her mother. So, the autopsy report also showed that Nina and her mother knew that their attacker was coming. Nina actually tried to escape, but she was beaten, and the killer actually broke several of her teeth, and her brain was actually bleeding inside of her skull. Suko's wounds were post-mortem, but it was only them. So the two women were stabbed after death. Law enforcement also sent all of the bloody objects to labs to get tested, and they get those results back, and they find that a lot of the blood is from the killer, and he is in fact a man. So they now know the killer is a man, which I mean isn't very helpful, but it's something. They also find several fingerprints from the killer all over the house. So at this point, it's looking pretty good for police because they literally have the killer's blood sample and DNA from the killer. So the police put it into the system, and neither the DNA nor the prints match anyone in Japan's system. So this means that either the killer was never caught for his crimes, or that this was his first crime. So knowing all of this, police kind of start to profile this man. So they obviously know that he's a man, but based on the clothes that they find in his house, not his house, in the Miyazawa family's house, they believe that he's younger, somewhere from 15 to 35, which is a very big age range, but that is what they come up with. One item that kind of helps them to determine this. There's multiple items, but this is the main one. They find a scarf, and this scarf was very popular for students to wear, like high school to college age students to wear in the 2000s. Now, I mean, I guess it could come from anyone because it's just an item of clothing, but that is what they determine. They also find a bag. It's like a convertible bag type of thing that switches from like a fanny pack to like a shoulder bag. And the straps are pulled very tight. It has like an adjustable strap thing on it, and it's pulled super tight. So the police kind of like determine that this man is a very slim build and an under 30-inch waist. Now this would also show how the killer could fit through the window if he was tiny. Now, something that is very different and kind of throws police off. Inside of that bag, it's filled with sand. Now at first the police don't really think anything is weird with this sand, but they send it off to get tested, and the sand is actually from the United States. It is from Southwest US, so either like California, Nevada, somewhere in there. Which, I mean, that's very weird. I know I keep saying that, but everything about this case is just so odd. They also find traces of cologne on various items. Now, this is kind of where a new theory starts to develop. So this particular type of cologne is popular with skaters. And there is a skate park right behind the Miyazawa's family home. And I'm talking right behind. Like, there's literally a fence. with some skaters about, like, noise complaints or whatever, which, I mean, yeah, skating isn't the quietest of activities. The park was also getting ready to expand, and the family was paid a good amount of money. Now, I couldn't find exactly how much, but I saw in several places that it was a large amount. They were paid to vacate their property so the park could expand. So now the police are kind of thinking that it might have been a robbery, that someone knew about the money they had just gotten, and it was a robbery gone wrong. Now, police have all of this information. They have so much evidence. They literally have fingerprints of the killer. But the weeks on the investigation turn into months, and those months to years. Now, there are a couple leads here and there, but there's still nothing significant. So, in August of 2005, so almost 5 years after their murders, there's like some new DNA testing technology that Tokyo has, and so police send samples of their killer's DNA, and it takes 8 months for the results to come back, but they learn that the killer is of East Asian heritage, so he's either Japanese, Chinese, or Korean, but only on his father's side. And then on his mother's side, he's European. This new information doesn't really help police all that much because the years just keep on passing. In 2015, an investigative journalist publishes book about the murders of these four family members, and he proposes like a new idea. He doesn't think that the killer was a skater or that it was a robbery at all. He actually thinks that the killer was a hired hitman. Now, police never really got any information to prove this. Author thinks that the killer wanted the money that the family received to vacate for the skate park. So, I mean, police kind of already came up with that idea, that it was like a robbery type of thing. But they never really thought of the hitman thing. The author also claimed that he knew who the killer was. Now, this whole thing might have been like for publicity or something, because the author of this book also makes several criticisms of police work, which convince several people to think the police could have done more. Now, I'm not trying say that the police did anything wrong, because it was a holiday, but they had so